clear to readers, to listeners, to the audience, to your followers, that you're being compensated in some way for making the statements and promoting the products. The first question is, when is a disclosure required? A lot of people will ask, you know, I have followers. It's clear that I'm a social media influencer. Everybody knows that I promote various products online. Isn't it clear to everybody that I'm a social influencer, that I'm being paid, that I'm being compensated? And what the Federal Trade Commission will say to that is no, that people don't understand, even when you have, you know, many, many followers, even when you're famous. So what the FTC says as a matter of course is, when in doubt, disclose. So I'd like to go into that just a little bit deeper. The FTC has issued online endorsement guidelines, so it has the FTC endorsement guides as well as frequently asked questions. And in those, the FTC talks about what, you know, what is enough that triggers a disclosure and what type of disclosure is required. So what the FTC says is that the following things would trigger a disclosure. If you're an influencer and you receive payment from a company, you receive free product. If you receive even a sweepstakes entry, if you are an employee, you have a business or a family relationship, like say you're the wife of the CEO of a company, or even if you receive another thing of value, let's say they flew you out on a trip to go somewhere, those are all things that the FTC would say is enough to require a disclosure. The second part of this is that that connection would not be expected. So what that means is, when Jennifer Aniston talks about Smart Water, for example, the FTC says, well, you know, she's been doing that for years, she does it on television, and she's a well-known brand partner with them. That would be expected. But pretty much short of that, the FTC thinks that people don't understand, and therefore, if you're an influencer and you're receiving one of these things or really anything of value, then you need to disclose your connection. And this is the statement that the FTC says on this, which is that an ad will be deceptive if it misleads consumers about the nature of the source. The underlying issue of this is that the FTC thinks that they don't want people to go online and read a bunch of posts and think that all these statements are being said about Mountain Rose herbs and these are just independent customers who have nothing to do with the company. If that message is what's being seen out there by consumers, the Federal Trade Commission is going to say that that's a false message, that's a deceptive message, and that's something that they'll look at. So, as I noted a little bit earlier, there were, you know, the FTC's brought a few enforcement actions against influencers or against companies that use influencers. So, one of the things that it's been doing last year in particular is it sent maybe 90 or 100 educational letters to influencers saying that this post that you made doesn't adequately explain your relationship with the company. And then this year it brought a couple of enforcement actions, and we'll show examples of those. And then it sent another round of letters to people. And just yesterday, actually, there was another action by the Federal Trade Commission against influencers or against a publishing company that engaged influencers who didn't disclose their connections. So this is really a hot area for the FTC. They're really acutely focused on it. So it's important that you follow these guidelines. And if you take anything away from this section of the presentation, it would be, when in doubt, disclose and disclose clearly. This is an example of one of the enforcement actions that the Federal Trade Commission brought. These two individuals owned the company, the CSGO lottery company. It was an online gambling service. And these two posts are posts that the owners of the company made online. Made $13,000 in 5 minutes on CSGO betting. Absolutely insane. And then he shows a YouTube video. Another guy says, bro, I've won like $8,000 using CSGO. I can't believe it. These two people actually owned the company. And if you didn't know that, if you were just on your Twitter checking out various tweets, you would have no idea that these people owned the company. And as a result, the FTC charged them with making these statements that were deceptive because they didn't disclose the fact that they had owned, that they owned the company in these tweets. Here's a couple of other examples. So Miley Cyrus saying, thanks at BlackJet for the flight to Silicon Valley, hashtag we can't stop. Is this enough for people to understand that it was paid? You know, the FTC takes this, you know, they say that if you say thanks to a brand alone, that won't be enough. But if you say thanks to the brand and explain what you received from the brand, then that's likely enough to explain your connection with the company in that post. The next one, the Kardashian post, pregnancy list at EOS to the rescue, there's nothing in there to indicate that she was paid by that company to promote the product. So the FTC would say that that's deceptive because it doesn't explain the relationship. And the position here that is a quote from Mary Engel, who used to be a division of advertising. She was an enforcement. She was one of the commissioner. She was deputy commissioner of enforcement, I think, in the advertising. And she said that if it's not obvious it's an ad, people should disclose that they're being paid. And when in doubt, use hashtag ad. It's three characters. The FTC thinks it's really easy. How do you disclose? It must be made in the same, the disclosure must be in the same format that the claim is made. And the idea behind this is that it has to mirror that there are a ton of different social media sites out there and outlets. There's video sites like YouTube where you're making statements visually and audibly. There's Snapchat, there's Facebook, there's Twitter, there's Instagram. And the way that the FTC is sort of dealing with all these media is saying that if you're making a claim in a picture, so you're sending, you've got a picture of a product, you need to disclose that you're being paid or that it's an ad within that picture. The video, then it needs to be disclosed on screen, visually, and audibly. And importantly, the disclosure needs to be made every time that the influencer appears. And here it says in broadcast or print advertisement, because that's what the FTC guidelines said previously. Now what they say is that even if you've posted on behalf of the brand and you've disclosed that it's an ad, let's say you disclosed 3 months ago you made a post, and then 3 months later you make another post, it's not enough that you put hashtag ad in your previous post. You have to do it each time if it's not clear that you're being compensated or that you're an influencer. Here's some disclosures that the FTC says is okay. As a spokesperson for Mountain Rose Herbs, I've teamed up with Mountain Rose Herbs. I was paid by Mountain Rose Herbs. I received whatever the product was to talk about, or from Mountain Rose Herbs to talk about my experience with it. You could have it on, you could say, if it's on a Mountain Rose website and they're talking about you, they might say, this person is a spokesperson for Mountain Rose Herbs. Again, hashtag ad, hashtag sponsor, those are appropriate ways to disclose as well. But if you have a website or a blog, and then let's say you have a link that says disclosure, and then in that disclosure that's a hyperlinked away and it says, I'm an influencer for Mountain Reserve, that's not going to be enough. You can't just say, you can't have an about page, you can't do a hyperlink. It really needs to be within the post, very close to the post. You know, the FTC says at the beginning of the post, and we'll get into some of those examples as well. They have to be unavoidable, as I said, at the beginning of a longer post. It can't be buried within, you know, hashtags or ads. It can't be after the read more button. It shouldn't be hidden in the hyperlink, as I just said. What the FTC says is that if a person is on their Twitter and they're looking at the site and they see a post, they shouldn't have to click on anything. It should be clear the second that they look at that post that it's an ad. And this last point is a good one, which is that it should be disclosed often. If you're doing a video, I'm not sure that it's as apt in this conversation, but if you're doing a video, it's a 5 or 10 minute long video, it's not enough to just have a blurb at the very beginning or wait till the end and have a blurb at the very end. If it's an ongoing video, you're doing different things, you're talking about different things, it should be repeated so that if somebody jumps in, 5 minutes into a 10 minute video, that they don't have to wait 5 more minutes to know that you're being compensated for that video. A lot of various social media sites
have widgets or the handshake tool, paid promotion tool, and Facebook, Instagram, YouTube have those. Those aren't enough, unfortunately. The FTC says that those are good, but that those are not enough. So when you're posting on those platforms, if you're on Facebook or Instagram and you're using the paid widget, that's necessary for the if it's a social media platform requirement, but it's not enough, you know, according to the Federal Trade Commission. So just because you're using whatever the widget is doesn't mean you don't also have to disclose it in the post. So here's a chart that summarizes what is and isn't sufficient according to the FTC. So in the left-hand column, branded alone, just saying branded, is not sufficient. The FTC now says that SP or spawn, and hashtag spawn, that's not enough. You have to say the whole word. You have to say sponsor. You can't say ambassador or employee. You have to actually say Mountain Rose or ambassador. Mountain Rose Herbs employee. So here are a couple of ways you can do it. Partner, again, is not enough. Interestingly, thanks, thank you, that's also not enough. I think a lot of us would say that, you know, if somebody says thanks, Mountain Rose Herbs, that's enough. But the FTC says no, you have to say thanks, Mountain Rose Herbs, for whatever you received. Here are some do's and don'ts. We're going to be providing you with the slides after the presentation as well, so you'll have this information, these tools that you can resort back to them if you have any questions as well. This is a flow chart that we created that actually is a really useful tool that you can sort of go through to determine whether or not you need to disclose. The first question is whether or not you're an MRH social influencer, whether or not you have a contract with them. If so, then you have to disclose. And then we've got the disclosure there at the end of the flowchart. Did MRH pay for you to post on social media? So say you're like, I don't have a contract, but I was paid to do this, or I received, you know, then you do have to disclose. If MRH is providing this free product, really if you received anything of value, then you have to disclose. And if you follow the flowchart, then you can sort of go through, determine what to say depending on what you received. And this then shows you the best way to disclose depending on the social media site that you're using. So if you're on a video website, you should disclose in the description of the video, spoken during the video, and written on the bottom of the screen during the video. Again, the platform disclosure mechanism for YouTube isn't enough. With Facebook and Twitter, you should disclose at the very beginning or as part of the post, but it should not be buried. And I'll show you some examples, too, of what really isn't enough. We have a question, can the disclosure be an image in a blog post, such as a text image that clearly states the relationship to the brand? Well, it depends. It's a good question. It will depend on what the blog post is. So if the blog post is, let's say it's a text paragraph describing, so it's just words on the page, and then maybe there's a picture of the product at the bottom of that. If the post is both words and the picture, then you really should disclose at the beginning of the post at those words, before the words begin. You know, I'm an influencer. I was paid by Mountain Rose Herbs to discuss my experience. The FTC would say it's not enough for you to post this language, post a text in paragraphs and then at the bottom have a picture with saying I'm an ambassador. If, on the other hand, you put the picture and the disclosure, say, at the top of the post, or if it was a picture-only post, like, say, you've got a blog, I mean, a lot of blogs just have pictures and words superimposed over the picture. In that case, you're probably okay as long as that disclosure is clear. It's got to be, and when I say clear, I don't just mean the words you're using. I'm also talking about the images, so that the font is contrasted against the background. You're not using gray font against a white background and you're not, let's say, using, well, you've got a blue background and black font. It really has to be easy to see. The other thing that the FTC thinks is that they think everybody is hard of hearing and hard of seeing. So it really needs to be large. It needs to be just easily to be seen. Think about, the way I think about it is, what would my, you know, 85-year-old grandma, what would she be able to see? And that's a funny way of thinking about it because we're looking at social media here, and my 85-year-old grandma wouldn't be on social media. But that's the people that the FTC has in mind when they're thinking about whether or not this is deceptive. And that's something that runs throughout the advertising enforcement of the Federal Trade Commission, including with the claims portion that we'll talk about a little bit later, which is the FTC looks at advertising and claims and things that a company does and says either directly or through its influencer from the lens of the elderly, people who might not be, you know, in control of all their faculties and not the smartest people necessarily. So the FTC really goes out of its way to think that, you know, it really wants you to dumb everything down, for lack of a better way of saying that. Here's an example of how not to disclose. There was an influencer, PewDiePie, I think his name was, who he was paid a lot of money by various brands to play video games and take videos or record videos of him and do live recordings, live casting of him playing various video games. I don't know how he got that role, but I'd love to do that. Is somebody asking a question? I think I hear a question. Okay, so in that case, he would post videos. If you look at this, there are no disclosures. He doesn't say anything during the video, and I'm not going to play it for time's sake. There's no disclosures in the title or the description of the video. You have to click Read More and scroll down. And after you scroll down, it says this video is sponsored by Warner Brothers. And then he even put in the disclosure, no one reads this far down into the description, what are you doing snooping around? And the Federal Trade Commission said, okay, you can't have a disclosure after the Read More button. People aren't going to click the Read More button, especially if they're watching this action-packed video on YouTube. So that was not sufficient, according to the FTC. As I noted earlier, the FTC sent a bunch of letters to influencers where it said that they had not clearly and conspicuously disclosed their relationship with the brand they were compensated for. So I'd like to go through some of those and show what the FTC said wasn't okay in those instances. Okay, so the first one is Vanessa Hudgens. She has a picture, I guess, by her pool of her with a bunch of friends, and Whispering Angels is, I think, a wine. And in this post, she has a picture of her friends, and she says, 6 bottles of Whispering Angel in. So they've presumably all had a bottle of wine, and this is a picture of them after they've drunk that wine. And the FTC sent her a letter and said, this is, you know, if you're being paid by Whispering Angel, then you need to disclose your connection with the company. And it's interesting here because Whispering Angel isn't tagged. There's no pictures of Whispering Angel, but the FTC said, if you're being paid, you're mentioning it on your social media, you need to disclose it. And one thing I will say about this post as well is that she actually wasn't being paid to promote the company. She actually did, I guess, just get, you know, she went out and bought Whispering Angel, and these are her friends drinking Whispering Angel. But the point of this is that it shows you, really, that you really don't have to do a lot to trigger that disclosure. Merely mentioning Whispering Angel and saying, you know, if she had been paid for that, and merely mentioning it in this way is enough to trigger a disclosure, according to the FTC. So the next one here, Rachel Parcell, she made a post about her 2-year-old's birthday and what an angel her 2-year-old was. So she doesn't, in the text of the post here, she doesn't mention the company Gap. But if you look in the picture, she tagged Gap Kids because the dress was by Gap Kids. FTC said that this is enough, this is an endorsement, this is something that Rachel was being paid to do, and that was enough to trigger a disclosure, and she needed to be telling her followers that she was being paid to buy Gap Kids to promote their product. The moral of this story is that your followers won't necessarily know, just because you are posting a picture of a Mountain Rose Herbs product, that you're being paid or that you necessarily have a relationship with the company. I think this is a really good example because it shows you how the FTC thinks that consumers think. And in this post, she's saying, just in time for Mother's Day or your next vacation, you can use code RINA or for 15% off of yours. Thank you. And she uses the hashtag partner. And the FTC said that in this case, the problem was that it was too far down. So she said, so it's at the next paragraph. It's not at the beginning of the post. I think you had to click read more to get to this, and so as a result, the FTC said that this wasn't enough. This is another example of showing you sort of how the FTC thinks. So in this one, you've got getting my teeth 4th of July ready, coconut and charcoal infused whitening strips, check out curlywhiteaustralia.com, hashtag no sensitivity, hashtag ad at curlywhiteaustralia. So in this case, the disclosure hashtag ad is buried within the longer string of hashtags and ads. So the FTC says that this is going to get lost, people aren't going to see it, so it needs to be the head of the string. Here's another one. So she's promoting HelloFresh. At the end of it, she says, give it a try with my code FreshCaroline for $35 off your healthy week at HelloFresh. Hashtag fall meals, hashtag healthy, hashtag HelloFresh fix, hashtag SP. To me, it seems like it's pretty clear that she's been paid, that she's somehow connected to the company, given that she has a coupon code, Fresh Caroline. FTC says no, that just because it's a coupon code doesn't necessarily understand it. They also, this is an example of why hashtag SP, is short for sponsored, is also not enough. The other thing, too, is that it came too late in the post. So, you know, all of these are sort of examples of where the FTC just thinks that you really need to disclose early, it needs to be clear, it needs to really be in people's face. Here's a couple of examples of the Kardashians promoting Fit Tea. This was an enforcement action by the National Advertising Division of the Better Business Bureau. So the National Advertising Division is an alternative dispute resolution body that it works with the FTC, but it also allows advertisers to challenge their companies, their competitors' advertising, and say, well, this claim isn't substantiated, or doing this wrong, or this doesn't comply with the FTC guidelines. And in this case, they brought an action against the Kardashians because they had said statements on their social media about Fit Tea without disclosing. So here you have, back to my morning routine, I'm starting the day with my Fit Tea time. Chloe's also saying, at Fit Tea always does a trick. Here, there's nothing, there's no disclosure. If you're looking at this and you don't know necessarily that they're being paid by Fit Tea, they don't say anything in it to explain that they are either. Again, this is a great example. I mean, whenever the Kardashians say anything online, you would think that people would understand, well, they're an influencer. Of course people understand. Again, the FTC, and in this case, the National Advertising Division would say, no, people don't understand. And this is what I'll call the after picture. So this is the right way to do it. So she has finally found this perfect after my workout, hashtag ad, right there at the end of the post. You know, it even though it's at the end of the post, it's only a couple of lines. It's clear. It's not hidden in a string of hashtags. So this was the after picture. This was, you know, the right way to do it. In this post, there's no disclosure. It's just the shout out here is not enough. Just doing a shout out is not enough, even if you're Diddy. This is a thank you disclosure. Again, thank you is just not going to be enough. You have to say thank you for what and explain what you received. That's what the FTC thinks. So here's another one that, this one is an interesting one because she does say thank you for these Night Fix ads, and she was ready for her birthday week. In this case, she was actually paid as an influencer. She hadn't just received, free, whatever these are, $20 or $30 products. She was also paid. So the FTC sent her a letter and said, you know, because you're a paid influencer for this company, you have to make it clear because this post makes it seem like you're just receiving something for free. So after she received that letter, she added an hashtag ad to the post. So in this one, she's showing her the unboxing of her FabFitFun box, and at the end of her, the end of the post there, she says, use code Jenny at FabFitFun.com for $10 off. You don't already get their boxes. You will not be disappointed. Hashtag FabFitFun, hashtag FFF partner. So this is a good example of how the FTC thinks that acronyms might also not be enough. People might not understand what FFF partner stands for as opposed to FabFitFun partner. And I know that that's an issue also with Mountain Rose Herbs because it's sort of a longer name. So once you're getting into that disclosure, then it's just getting to be pretty unwieldy at that point in a hashtag or, as an at. So the long story short of it is that the FTC said that she needed to do this in a clearer way. She either needs to say FabFitFun partner or just disclose naturally and say in the text of it that she is a partner of FabFitFun. Okay, so now we're on to the second half of the presentation, which is about making substantiated product claims, making claims that are appropriate for each of the products in their categories. Before we go on to that, does anybody have a question about the influencer and disclosure section of the presentation? I think we'll go ahead. But again, if you have any questions, just raise your hand here or use the chat function. All right. So as background, so just as the same as with making influencing posts, it's important to make appropriate claims and substantiated claims. Because if you don't, as an influencer and employee, then Mountain Rose Herbs can be on the hook. Let me see. I see somebody asking for me to answer a question. I'm not sure that I see the question. The only question that I saw was that whether or not a disclosure can be an image in a blog post. If there's another question, please copy and paste it back into the screen and I will answer it. But in the meantime, I'd like to give this example of where a company got in trouble for a claim made by an influencer. So in this claim, Kim Kardashian said that she was partnering to raise awareness about treating morning sickness. And what's interesting about this, first of all, she says, I'm partnering with XYZ to raise awareness about treating morning sickness. So that's an example of what would be a natural and appropriate disclosure from the disclosure influencer side. The problem in this post came in with the substance. And what she says in it is, as you know, my hashtag morning sickness has been pretty bad. I tried changing things about my lifestyle, like my diet, but nothing helped, so I talked to my doctor. He prescribed this. I felt a lot better. And most importantly, it's been studied, and there was no increased risk to the baby. So excited and happy with my results that I'm partnering to raise awareness. So as a result of that post, the FDA sent a warning letter for a variety of reasons, including that she hadn't disclosed the drug's risks, which rendered the drug misbranded for the purposes of FDA regulations.
It's important to note that there's no such thing as a personal use exception. If you make a claim, it has to be truthful and non-misleading based on objective criteria, not your personal use. So just to throw it out, why this claim would be totally impermissible, if you said this product cured my cancer, putting aside that it's an impermissible disease claim, you could not say that unless it was backed up by scientific evidence to support that it can actually cure cancer. And that's sometimes the disconnect that influencer has and quite frankly, companies have regarding testimonials. There's just one golden rule. There's no such thing as a personal use exception.
That's right. So what Todd means by that then is that when you're making a claim as an influencer, an employee on behalf of the company, you have to ensure that you have substantiation the same way that the company would need to have substantiation if they were making the claim directly. So just because you had an experience with a product, that in and of itself isn't enough to substantiate statements that you're making about that experience. The flip side of that is that if you're making statements about a product, you have to make sure that they reflect the truthful and accurate opinion you had about the product. So let's say you had a bad experience with a certain product and, say it made you sick or it didn't work for you at all. You can't then send out a tweet or write on your Instagram that the product was amazing, it worked great, and you didn't feel, and it improved everything amazingly. You need to make sure that what you're saying about the product is truthful, it reflects your experience, but also that it would be substantiated, and it's something that is an appropriate claim to make for that specific product. So when you're asking yourself what type of substantiation is needed for a specific product or a specific claim, you have to first sort of look at what type of claim is being made. That's the first step. There's a number of types of claims. The first is the one that we think of most often, which is what's an express claim. It's something that you're saying using your words or when you're speaking or you're typing, something like, this mouthwash prevents colds. This product reduces inflammation associated with exercise. This product, helps eyesight. An implied claim, on the other hand, is one that isn't necessarily made by the words. It could be made indirectly or by inference. So an example would be, this mouthwash kills the germs that cause colds. And the implication there is that the mouthwash will prevent colds. So even though you're not saying that this mouthwash prevents colds, you're saying that it kills the germs that cause colds. And by killing the germs that cause colds, it prevents people from getting colds. Another thing, too, to know is that pictures can also make claims as well. Give me one second. I've got a question here. What about a negative claim? I know it's not what we want to do when we influence, but I'm curious if there are rules about claiming another entity's products cause illness, et cetera. That is a great question. So let's say that I'm working with Mountain Earth Herbs, but I took a competitor's product and it
you know, made me sick or I had a horrible experience with it. Essentially, when you say that, if you're being promoted by Mountain Rose Herb, if you're being paid or compensated by Mountain Rose Herb to make statements about a specific Mountain Rose Herb's product, then if you make what I'll call negative statements about a competitor's product, then Mountain Rose Herbs could technically get in trouble for it if it's a competing product. Let's say you're an influencer for multiple different types of products, and you had a negative experience with somebody, you know, whose product isn't at all a Mountain Rose competitor. Let's say it's, you know, you used, you know, I don't know, a certain recipe. Let's say you used Blue Apron, you had a bad experience with them. That would be a different situation. But in this case, I would avoid making negative statements about Mountain Rose Herbs competitors. And the reason for that, and we've seen this on our end as attorneys who, you know, deal with litigation and enforcement, is that a lot of times advertisers, competitors, will very jealously guard their brand. So if you're saying something negative about somebody else's product and then they see that you're disclosing in your other posts that you're an influencer for Mountain Rose Herbs, then what would happen, and I know what we've done, you know, what Todd and I have done is when we're working on the other side of this, is you might actually get a letter as an influencer from an attorney for another brand saying you're defaming their product. And Mountain Rose Herbs could get a demand letter as well saying, you've got this influencer out there who's defaming our product. You're paying that influencer to say that, and therefore you're liable for those statements. So going down the path of negatively talking about a specific product or a specific company is sort of a dangerous or risky path from that perspective. On the other hand, if you would like to say that if you'd like to make a positive statement about a Mountain Rose Herbs product and say, this is the best XYZ herb product that I've tried, I've been looking for years, I've tried everything else out there, and this is the best in my experience, then that's a different type of claim because you're not mentioning any competitors' names, you're not calling anybody out, you're not, you know, and by doing that, you sort of mitigate the risk. Then a company that's sort of jealously enforcing its brand might look at that, and if they see a lot of that, that's one thing. But it's another thing when you actually specifically call out a brand and say that their product is not good. We have another question. How about the ingredients in a competitor's product? So, for example, let's say another competitor has high fructose corn syrup in their product and the Mountain Rose Herbs product doesn't. You can say that, you know, I'm happy with this MRH product because it does not contain high fructose corn syrup. That's the way that I would really focus, if at all possible, of saying, focusing on the positive in the MRH product rather than focusing on the negative in the competitor's product. Because once you start focusing on the negative, you start calling them out for having things, then you're going down this dangerous road of really putting the spotlight on them. On the other hand, if you're shunning high fructose corn syrup or other types of ingredients, like let's say all natural claims. An all natural claim is a very it's a very hot button issue, using the words natural or all natural. When you're making a statement about saying I don't like non-natural products, or I don't like products that contain high fructose corn syrup, then you have to make sure that the Mountain Rose Herbs product that you're talking about fits the criteria that you're putting in. So let's say I don't like using non-natural products. There's so many non-natural products or non-organic products out there. I use Mountain Rose Herbs products. When you say that, you're making a sort of negative inference that Mountain Rose Herbs product is natural, that it doesn't have high fructose corn syrup. So you have to be very careful, because that's again an implied claim. When you're putting down something else and saying, I don't like this, I like
now there's herbs, then what you're saying, then the message you're conveying is that Melrose Herbs does not have that attribute. It has another better attribute. So that's something to always be mindful of when you're making these statements about competitors. Any claim that you make, you have to have substantiation for it. Let's take the claims that we were just talking about. Let's say the ingredient high fructose corn syrup. That's a pretty easy one. If I'm promoting a Mountain Rose Herbs product and I'm saying this doesn't have high fructose corn syrup, then that's an express claim. The claim is that the product contains none of that ingredient, and the substantiation required for that is, you know, the ingredient list, that it doesn't contain it. You know, MRH probably can also provide additional information about its ingredients to you for things that you're saying online. If you're making an efficacy claim, so let's say that you're claiming that this product, let's go to the mouthwash product, that this mouthwash cures colds, then the FTC holds that to a higher standard. It expects efficacy claims to be supported by controlled clinical studies, either on the products or on the key ingredients or on the formulation, to show that the product has the result, that the product or its ingredients, key ingredients, formulation has can deliver the results and the effects that are touted in the advertisement. If you're making, let's say, comparative claims, like you're comparing a Mountain Rose Herbs product to one of its competitors, it's really important to know that you have to actually, even if it's just your experience, to say that, you know, this product cures colds better than that competitor's product. That personal use is not going to necessarily be enough to substantiate that claim, because that's an express claim that one of the products works better than the other product at delivering a benefit, in that case, curing colds. What would be a softer claim would be what I would call a preference claim. So I'm an influencer. I had this great experience with Mountain Rose Herbs. You know, I've tried other products, and I like Mountain Rose Herbs best. So in that scenario, you're really expressing an opinion. But again, you would need to disclose that you have that relationship with it. So you would say something like, I like, you know, I tried this product from Mountain Rose Herbs, and I liked it so much that I've partnered with them, and I've become a brand ambassador, a Mountain Rose Herbs brand ambassador. So that would be a way that you're making a claim that is, you know, substantiated. It's not a strong claim, but it's also a claim that shows your followers that you appreciate the brand, you appreciate the products, and you enjoy using those products. You have to have a reasonable basis for the claim before making it. So what I mean by that is, if you're an influencer, you can't go and make a claim that a product delivers a certain result and then call up Mountain Rose Herbs after and say, like, you know, oh, I said this. Is this okay? And Mountain Rose Herbs says, well, we don't actually know that. Let's go back to the formulators, talk to the scientists, let's make sure that it does this. Can't do that. You need to make sure that any statements you're making about the product, you have a basis for them before you go out and disseminate that. And this is particularly true. I mean, this is true in all advertising, but it's particularly true in social media. Social media is so fast. It's fast moving. There are people that just are on social media. The Federal Trade Commission has investigators. Class action plaintiffs as well have, you know, they have interns that just literally are at their computer looking to monitor various social media sites. They're looking at specific hashtags. They're looking at specific companies in some cases, or in specific verticals, types of products, dietary supplements being one. So that's just something that you should be mindful of, especially on social media. This is something that it's very monitored, so the claims that you're making are being seen. You should assume that when you're making a claim, it's being seen by a regulator, a competitor, a class action plaintiff.
And this is this goes back to my previous comment about the level of support really depends on the claim that you're being made. So the first factor is the type of product. If the claim you're making is related to health or safety, you really need to have a higher level of substantiation. And all that to say is that if you're talking about side effects of a product, if you're talking about it helped me cure cancer, for example, that's a very egregious, aggressive example. But when you're making claims that a product can cure something, that it helps your health, that it helps with especially things involving aging, those are things that you really need to have a high level of substantiation. And typically what we say for that would be that you need to have a study conducted on the final product itself. And a lot of times, if that study hasn't been conducted, then you should avoid making claims that a product can cure something or that it has really big effects on your health, that it, there are no side effects is another one. The next factor is the type of claim. If there's no way for consumers really to objectively evaluate the claim, it's going to be a higher standard. So let's go back to the ingredient claim. High fructose, it has no, high fructose corn syrup or something in it. Then that's easy for consumers to evaluate. They can just look in the bottle. They can zoom in on the product description to see if it has it. It's a little bit harder, let's say, for other types of claims, like helped 73% of people feel better within 2 days. And that's really difficult for a consumer who's just looking at that to figure out. And that's going to be something that requires more substantiation, in addition to it being a very detailed claim. The FTC also looks at the consequences of a false claim, and it really thinks that if you're making claims about health, if you're selling an ingestible that's supposed to affect or promote health and wellness, then the FTC will look closely at those products. Industry standard, we put that on here because that's one of the factors, but I would say that that's not really as big of a factor because a lot of times we can't use the excuse that, well, everybody else in the industry is doing that. And that's to say that if you're an influencer, you're looking online, you're seeing what competitors and what competitors' influencers are saying about the product, you really shouldn't assume that just because other people are saying it about the product that it's necessarily going to be something that you can say about Mountain Rose Herbs products. Okay. I think that's all we have.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I want to just reiterate here is that you can't make claims that a dietary supplement or food cure, treats, prevents any type of disease. So you can't say that it helps with allergies. You cannot say that it helps with arthritis. You can't even say that it helps alleviate joint pain. Those are all be considered impermissible claims by FDA. So claims matter. You can't talk about medicinal mushrooms and how medicinal mushrooms will help reduce your risk of getting a cold or flu. All those would be impermissible to state. So it's just important, never mention a disease state or imply a disease state.
That's right. So you shouldn't make statements about the products that they can mitigate or cure or alleviate or treat the symptoms or signs of any type of disease. And so if we're anywhere in the realm of diseases, like Todd said, arthritis or allergies, those are just things that you should really avoid. So don't say that this product, cured your son's allergies or alleviated the issues associated with it, that it cured your cold. Those are just claims that are really sort of like a lightning rod for regulators as well as class action plaintiffs. We have a question that says, can you word it in a way like this product may help or assist?
If it is accurate, in other words, if there's no science to support it, then the word may does not help. So there still has to be science to support that it may help with something like with this.
So the next question we have is, how about phrases like supports the immune system or supports joint health?
That's fine. As long as you can substantiate that those are claims that will be relatively low risk from being challenged by the FTC and are perfectly permissible with the FDA. I actually have some slides on this that I can forward to Kylie, and she can send over to you all. It just, with the hour time, it was too much to get into everything.
Okay. Yeah, the big thing about the disease claims versus appropriate, structure function claims are that you can say that a product promotes good health in otherwise healthy people. You can't say that a product will mitigate or treat something that is associated with a disease or a disease population.
And if we want to do another 30-minute later on, we can do that as well, because it's really, it would take at least 30 to 45 minutes to go through how you evaluate whether a claim is a permissible structure function claim.
And if we don't have any other questions, we'll also be circulating the slides as well as some guidelines and frequently asked questions that will have information about the influencer disclosures, and also we'll have some information too about the drug claims and what are permissible versus impermissible drug claims. So we'll leave it open for maybe a minute or two to see if anybody else has any other questions. Have any other questions? If you do have any, then just send those to Kylie, and Kylie, you can forward those to us. We'll also follow up with you to provide this information so that you can circulate it to the bigger team.
Perfect. Yeah, and I will be sending out the slides and the FAQ they were talking about to you guys, so as soon as they're in my hands, they will be in yours.
Great. Well, thank you, Kylie, and thank you everyone for joining us, and as I said, please feel free to ask any questions. We're happy with any follow-up. So.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.